Dr. Susan Recker was raised in Ames, Iowa. She earned her veterinary degree from Iowa State University in 1997, then practiced small animal medicine in a few offices in Wisconsin and Illinois. Looking for more ways to help with her clinical cases, she earned her certification in veterinary spinal manipulative therapy from the Healing Oasis Wellness Center. She also developed an interest in clinical nutrition. In 2014, she designed an accredited veterinary technician training program for Gateway Technical College in Wisconsin. She was involved in everything from the design and implementation of the educational program, as well as having input on the planning of the physical facility. After relocating to Arizona, she met Steve Brown and intensified her study of nutrition. She is currently on the staff of the Animal Diet Formulator and loves to help people get the most out of the ADF software. Please enjoy this conversation with Dr. Susan Recker as we discuss her childhood, education, practice experience, and current position with ADF. Dr. Recker, I'm happy to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Sybil. I'm just delighted to be speaking with you today.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ames, Iowa, center of the state, and also home of Iowa State University, which is where I went to undergrad and to vet school.
What was it like growing up in a university town?
It was a good experience, despite the fact that Ames, Iowa is a relatively small town, very rural. Having a university right there afforded a lot of cultural opportunities. And as a kid, that mostly for me translated into, I got to see a lot of really great concerts that came to our venue. Things like we had the ballet on occasion, things like that. So growing up in a university town was a good experience for me. It definitely increased the diversity in Ames. I think if there had not been a university there, it would have been very homogenous, and my growing up experience would not have been as rich as it was.
Did you have a lot of pets growing up?
No, believe it or not, I did not. I did not grow up in a family that had a culture of loving animals. My parents, neither one of them had had animals growing up, and we did have a dog briefly while I was a child. And looking back, I can see all of the mistakes that we made in terms of, potty training and diet and all sorts of things. I kind of cringe a little bit when I look back. But the long and the short of it was, he was a precious little miniature poodle named Brandy, and he never was potty trained properly. And my mom, not being an animal person historically, struggled with that quite a bit. So she rehomed Brandy to one of her coworkers, and Brandy lived to be 17 years old in my mom's coworker's home and was loved dearly and continued to pee on her carpet till the day he died.
Oh, gosh. So when did you decide that you wanted to be a veterinarian?
I had kind of a circuitous route. I went to Iowa State University, and I went through several different majors, and just really couldn't quite find my place where I felt like, okay, this is it. I finally landed in the right place. And I remember going to see my academic advisor at one point and just saying, listen, I don't know. I don't know which way I want to go here. And he said to me, okay, well, you seem to like science. And I said, yeah, I really like science. I enjoy that a lot. And he said, do you like problem solving? And I said, yeah, I do. Do you like people? Yeah, I do. And he said, are you aware that we have a world-class veterinary school right here on our campus? And to be honest, I really didn't. It wasn't really in my awareness. I mean, sure, I'd heard it mentioned before, but it really wasn't on my radar at all. And so he and I talked about it for a few minutes, and I said, okay, well, let me take a couple of animal science courses and just see what I think. And I did that, and I determined pretty quickly that was the right direction for me to go, that I really enjoyed the coursework. And so I applied to vet school, was accepted, and my decision was confirmed and affirmed pretty quickly once vet school started that I really felt like I was in the right place.
Did you spend any time in clinics before you applied?
I did a little bit of shadowing. That was part of the application process. And so I shadowed with a mixed animal practitioner as well as a small animal practitioner. And that experience was a lot of fun and definitely kind of pushed me in that direction.
How big was your class?
We started with right around 100 students. And I think when we graduated, we were somewhere in the mid 80s.
That's a fair bit of attrition.
Mm-hmm.
And what year did you finish?
1997.
And how did you enjoy school?
Oh my goodness. I still say that was probably the best 4 years of my life. Super challenging, of course, as you know, vet school is pretty rigorous and demanding. And it was, but it was also just so much fun, so much camaraderie and, you know, because it was so challenging and so difficult. And there are a lot of, I guess, kind of emotionally charged experiences that happen in vet school as you're, you know, doing surgery for the first time or seeing cases come into clinics that are not doing well and losing some animals and things like that. So we, as classmates, we experienced things together that brought us really close. So it was a time of making a lot of great friends and establishing relationships and sharing this really intense experience together. And there was also a lot of, you know, going to the bar together on Friday night and hitting the dance floor en masse, all, you know, probably 50 or 60 of us. And that was certainly a bonding experience as well. And just a couple of, last year, we had our 25th reunion from graduating vet school. And I accidentally found myself organizing that reunion. my good friend from my class and I are still in contact daily. And we were talking about how, boy, you know, our 25th is coming up. I wonder if anyone's doing anything. And I said, well, you know, I'll just reach out to the alumni office and see if there's anything on the books. And the lovely person in the alumni office replied and said, well, no one has started anything, but here's everything you need. So I'll just put you down as the organizer and I'll just give everyone your contact info. And I just, you know, before I knew it, I was organizing our reunion kind of by default. It was really great to see most everyone 25 years later and reconnect and just rekindle all those relationships. So it was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's amazing. Had you been back to Ames prior to that?
I had been back just a handful of times prior to that. You know, since I grew up in Ames, I went back. I don't have any family left in Ames, but I went back for a high school reunion in the interim. And then traveling through, I had taken my kids to Ames and done the obligatory, here's where mom grew up and here's where mom went to school and here's where mom went to the park. And my kids couldn't have cared less. But I thought it was great. And it was fun to go back.
So did you have an idea of what sort of medicine you wanted to practice when you got out? Did you change your mind along the way? How did it work?
I knew that I was interested primarily in small animal medicine. I found large animal medicine intriguing while I was in school. But one of the experiences that told me I was pretty sure I was going to end up on the small animal track was while I was on my equine rotation and I was the student on call, I did get called in to assist with a colic surgery in the middle of the night. And so I get to school, start scrubbing in on the case, and the resident who was doing the surgery was this massively huge guy. He was like, I don't know, 6'8" or something. He was really tall and he had these gigantic arms. And so the horse is on the surgery table, lying on its back, you know, belly exposed, belly's open, the resident's in there, surgeon's doing his thing. And I look over and he is inside that horse abdomen up to his shoulder And he's still fishing around in there. And he's like, oh, I just can't quite reach it. I'm almost there. I just can't quite. And I watched that and I thought, there is just no way that I feel like I could do that. And I just didn't have a whole lot of experience with horses growing up or at all, really. And so I found them to be these mystical, magical, very mysterious creatures that I didn't really know, you know, kind of how to read them and what they were all about, and just kind of felt more comfortable going towards dogs and cats. And I didn't really have a set preference or a feeling one way or the other with, you know, did I want to focus more on cats or dogs? I did do an externship at a cat clinic, and I really, really liked that. But I ended up going into a practice that saw 95% dogs and cats with a few other small mammals. And I kind of by default ended up being mostly the feline practitioner there, because I think, you know, cats are, they can be a little bit of a challenge. That's, we always say they don't read the book. And so kind of by default, I ended up with a lot of those patients and really kind of fell in love with doing kitty medicine, because they are such a challenge. And it's so super gratifying when you can decode their mystery, if even for a moment. But then of course they change the rules on you just as soon as you think you've got it figured out.
For sure. So where was that practice?
That practice was in Paddock Lake, Wisconsin. So that is the practice I went to right out of vet school. I was looking to stay in Iowa, actually, but all of the jobs that were open at that point when I graduated were mostly swine focused, Iowa being a really big pig producing state. And I knew I didn't want to do swine medicine. So I ended up in Wisconsin and stayed there for the next 25 years, 24 years maybe, before moving to Arizona.
How many doctors were in that first practice?
When I began there, let's see, there were 1, 2, 3, 4. There were 4 of us when I began there, and I stayed there for several years. And by the time I left, there were, I think, 7 of us there.
Were they, so you had some Wisconsin grads there, obviously, but any other schools represented?
Yes, there was, the owner of the practice was an Illinois grad, and then there was a fellow Iowa Stater, and another Illinois grad. So when I first started, we were evenly split, 2 Illinois, 2 Iowa State. So no Wisconsin grads at that point, but we did get some as time went on.
Yeah. Was it nice to mingle with people trained in different places though?
It was interesting to see how different schools had maybe different cultures or a different focus or a different way of teaching things, or even just different terms or different acronyms they would use. Like, for example, a cruciate ligament injury. The particular surgeon that taught me at Iowa State always referred to it as a reckle, a ruptured anterior cruciate ligament. Uh-huh. And when I first said that term at the practice I was at, the Illinois grad just stared at me and said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "You know, the cruciate ligament in the knee." And he said, "Oh, well, why didn't you just say that it was a cruciate ligament?" And I said, "Well, I thought I did," but we were speaking the same language, but clearly totally different dialects.
So what kind of practice did you go to next?
I went to a practice in Illinois, just over the border, which was also a dog cat focused practice. And this particular practice was in an area that kind of straddled between a very affluent area and a very economically disadvantaged area. And so the clientele there was very diverse and very interesting. And I had one of my more memorable experiences at that clinic where a client came in with his dog and the dog was sick. And I was trying to take a history from this client. And I got to the point in my history taking where I wanted to know, you know, when did this dog last have a bowel movement? And I asked that question and the man said, what are you talking about? And so I went through every word I could think of for defecation, poop, whatever. And finally, I had to go down to the list till I was actually, you know, cursing at this man to ask him. And then I finally got the information I needed. But that was kind of an eye-opening experience for me and taught me a little bit about communication and how sometimes you have to think out of the box and maybe be a little uncomfortable for me, but it wasn't uncomfortable for him. But I had to really kind of dig deep to find words that we could connect on and both of us be on the same page and know what we were talking about.
Wow. So when did you get an interest in holistic medicine?
I was probably about 10 years into my career, maybe a little less, when I started to become a little bit frustrated with cases not turning out the way I thought they should. And I started to feel like even though I was doing everything quote unquote right, things weren't responding. Animals weren't responding. Disease processes weren't responding the way they were supposed to or the way I wanted them to. And so I started to think that there had to be some other tools that I could put in my toolbox and other approaches that I could use. And I think that this was driven primarily from a realization that I had. And this sounds almost kind of stupid to me when I say it out loud, but I'm going to say it anyway. The realization I had was, huh, maybe I should listen to my clients. Like maybe when they tell me that their dog or their cat is doing XYZ thing, and based on what I know about the condition that this animal has, they're not supposed to do that thing. But the person who knows them best is saying, yeah, they are doing that thing. Maybe I should believe them. And again, I realize that sounds kind of obvious when I say it out loud, but I don't want to say that I was taught to think that way, but I think that was the message I got, even if that wasn't what was actually presented, was, you know, you learn about these things, you're the doctor, you know what's going on, you know best. And I came to believe that that wasn't the whole story, that that dog's mom or that cat's mom or dad knew their pet better than I did. And if I listened very closely, I could get a lot more clues than if I was just listening to answer the questions I was taught to ask. And so that realization that those owners were telling me things that were super important and that were going to help me find how I could best help that dog or that cat was what kind of opened my eyes to, okay, well, I need some more tools then, because what I have at my disposal right now just isn't cutting it. And so at that same point in my life, I had young children and I was very much attuned to nutrition for them and the difference that food can make to either help or hurt in their development and their overall health. And that also was kind of a light bulb moment that, again, saying it out loud, I'm like, well, that's pretty obvious, Susan. You know, if that's true for my human children, why wouldn't it be true for these other beautiful life forms in front of me? And so kind of at that same time, it was a tandem realization for me that I needed to look outside the box and I needed to listen to the pet parents and I needed to focus a little bit more on nutrition and take that farther than what I had learned, which from what I understand from many of my colleagues, we just aren't taught a whole lot about nutrition in vet school. So I started to look at that a little bit, and I also became interested in pursuing veterinary spinal manipulation therapy. So at that point, I took the course through Healing Oasis, and that is where I first met you, and you were one of the instructors in that course, and I enjoyed it very much. And so that course gave me some additional tools, and as part of the course, talked about a lot of different modalities that are open to us in veterinary medicine to use in helping our patients. So that was kind of a big jump in my learning evolution and my introduction to integrative medicine.
As part of that course, you had to work on horses. How was it being reintroduced to them after not doing anything with them since school, probably?
Yeah. I had ridden horses just a couple of times in the interim, but so that's very interesting. I think they're magical creatures, and I was excited to work on them with some guidance from our instructors. But I also discovered on the first day in the horse barns that I had developed a serious horse allergy. So, you know, as part of adjusting in the cervical vertebrae, you know, in their neck, you're kind of hugging these big guys up, and you got some full body contact going, and it's going great. I'm having a great time. It's super fun. Horses are like the most gratifying to adjust, by the way, I think, because they totally lean into it, and they like, they get these big sighs of contentment, and that was super fun. But we finished that first day, and I'm like, boy, I'm a little itchy. And I look down, and I am just head to toe hives. So I got through the rest of those horse days just super hopped up on Benadryl. And unfortunately, I don't do any horse spinal manipulation therapy anymore.
Were you in a practice that supported you doing the manipulation?
Yes and no. They didn't really embrace it. They didn't, it was definitely a conventional practice, and they did not, see the utility of it. As I started to have some clients there who were requesting it, who were interested in it, they became a little bit, interested in learning more. But it was such a busy practice that, everybody just kind of did their own thing. And so I wasn't at that particular practice for a whole lot longer after I completed that course. But then I did go to another practice that was more focused on integrative medicine, and I used it extensively in that next practice.
Nice. So at what point did you become involved in teaching?
Yeah. So in 2014, I was looking to get a better work-life balance with my kids and, you know, being there for Saturday morning soccer games and that kind of thing. And I was looking to kind of transition away from clinical practice and into something that would be a little more schedule friendly for me. And so at that time, Gateway Technical College, which is located in Elkhorn, Kenosha, and Racine, Wisconsin, three neighboring counties there, they were looking to begin a veterinary technician program. And so they hired me to design that program. And that was quite a humbling experience, because on the first day of my job there, they literally put me in an empty cubicle, gave me a laptop, and said, okay, design us a program. And so I just kind of sat there and looked at the empty walls of the cubicle for about 10 minutes. And then I said, okay, well, let's just get started then. And I just, reached out to all the resources that I could find and gathered as much information I could about programs that are already in existence and what are they doing well and what are areas where they're struggling and what could I take from all of those pieces of the puzzle and put together a program that would use all of our resources to their maximum potential. So that was a really fun experience for me to design the program from the ground up. I had the opportunity to help in the design of the building where it would be housed and order all the equipment. I wrote all the curriculum for the program. I took us through the accreditation process with the arm of AVMA that accredits veterinary technician programs. That first class that we graduated was a pretty special moment for me. And I was there through several more classes and loved them all and really enjoyed the teaching experience. But that first class holds a special place in my heart to this day.
Oh, I bet. So were you the only instructor at the time?
It was myself, and then I had a veterinary technician, Heather Darbo, who did a fantastic job. She taught about half the curriculum, and I taught about half the curriculum. And on occasion, we would have adjunct instructors who would help us out for a few courses here and there. But for the most part, it was just Heather and I.
That must have been extremely gratifying. I get nervous just having you talk about the accreditation process.
Oh, yeah, that was, I was so relieved when it was done, and it was very intense, but that's not something that I necessarily need to do again.
Good. So where did life take you after that?
So after that, I moved here to Arizona, where I am now. And I had the good fortune when I moved here of meeting Steve Brown, who is has been instrumental in fresh dog food, essentially dog food. He does some cat formulation, but mostly he's a dog food guy. And he and I are actually literal next door neighbors. So I have had the honor and privilege of just toddling next door and sitting next to him in front of his computer as he showed me the spreadsheet that he built and all of the research that he's done on ingredients and fats and minerals and amino acids and everything. And that mentoring process that he has done for me, I could not have replicated from anything else, I don't think. And so Steve introduced me to a whole world there. And because of that, I ended up at Animal Diet Formulator, and I get to continue to work with Steve and help people who are using ADF and do some diet formulation for individuals, for veterinarians, and for commercial food companies. And this latest chapter has been a lot of fun. I'm a foodie and I like to cook, and I have enjoyed bringing kind of that creative artistic piece of food into making complete and balanced diets for dogs and cats to try and make this not just as beneficial for health as possible, but also like a sensory experience for them. And so that's been a lot of fun.
So do you enjoy the troubleshooting aspect? You're helping subscribers with formulation?
Yeah, I do. I do enjoy that. I am not like a super technologically savvy individual though. And so when I first started doing it, it totally took me out of my comfort zone, because, you know, usually my technological skills are to turn the computer off and then turn it back on again. And then I've pretty much exhausted my repertoire, but I have picked up some things along the way. So I feel much more adept with that aspect of it. But the questions that our users ask about formulation and about nutrition in general, sometimes they ask some real, real tough questions that really make me think, make me do some research, make me kind of wrap my head around something that I may not have thought about before. And those questions I really, really, really enjoy. They help all of us. They help me to learn things as I'm looking for the answer. Hopefully it helps the user when I find the answer. And occasionally it leads to something that has far-reaching consequences that will change something in ADF or allow us to share a new discovery, and that potentially changes the world of dog and cat nutrition.
Got to be some differences between working on a formulation for an individual pet versus a commercial application, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, with an individual pet, I'm always looking to totally customize for that dog or for that cat. Like, you know, what health issues do we have going on? What are this dog's or cat's food preferences? Do they have any food intolerances? What are the owner's limitations in terms of ingredient sourcing? What's the owner's comfort level for food preparation? So there's a lot of different factors to take into account there. And it's quite fun to totally tailor that to that individual family, that pet and that pet guardian, versus commercial formulation is fun, but in a whole different way. And it's, you know, oftentimes focused on specific ingredient sourcing or financial considerations or niche marketing or that kind of thing. So it's a challenge, but in a totally, totally different way.
What's your experience with whether the user, whether it be a veterinarian or perhaps an individual owner application, you know, what's making them decide that they need to use something to actually balance a diet? Do they have prior experience with home prepared food and they've realized that they're not doing it correctly, or how do they come to find ADF?
That's such a good question. I think people come to us from a variety of ways. I think sometimes it's that the animal has been eating commercial food and possibly highly processed commercial foods like kibble or canned food or that kind of thing, and is having a lot of health issues. And I think sometimes those pet parents have kind of the same light bulb moment that I had when I had young kids and I was looking at my patients in the clinic and thinking, wait a minute, I think food plays a role here. So in some of those cases, these individual pet owners are making that connection themselves, and maybe they have the support of their veterinarian, or maybe they don't, depending on where their veterinarian is on that spectrum of awareness of food as medicine. So I think a lot of people come to us because their animals have health issues and they're trying to support them with food the best they can. Other people maybe their pets aren't having health issues, but they're just aware of the power of nutrition in themselves and also in pets. And they look around at what's available to them in the current commercial market, wherever they might be, and find it to be lacking. So they'd like to do some home cooking, or they just want to have complete control over the quality of the ingredients that their animal is eating. And in other cases, I think it's that there's starting to be a lot more buzz out there on social media about pet wellness. And so some of the social media influencers that are talking about diet are kind of getting this ball rolling. And then pet parents listen to that. And then they start to have those thoughts about, oh, well, what about feeding my dog the same bowl of dry, crunchy food every day? Is that really the best? Maybe I should look at these other options. So I think they're coming to us from a lot of different avenues. And I think that is increasing.
That's great. You know, as you were discussing that, one of the applications really hit me, because we do have a lot of clients who will come and their pet's been diagnosed with some condition that their primary care veterinarian has deemed necessary for a prescription kibble. And they, mm-hmm. you know, they want to just avoid that. And so certainly the ADF is a great resource to help individual owners out with that application.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Susan, this has been wonderful. Great to hear your story. Where do you think you're going to be with the ADF for a while? What's your career going to look like from here?
Yeah. You know, if I've learned anything over the course of my life, it's that, it's pretty silly when I try to plan too far out, because things never turn out the way I thought they would. And sometimes that's a really good thing. But I feel very thankful to be at ADF. It's a great company to be a part of. The mission is one that I truly believe in. The company is very supportive. They're constantly growing and changing and evolving. Oftentimes when I have user requests, people say, you know, ADF is really great, but if it could just do this one thing, it'd be even better. And I love it, because I take that back to the team, and our tech team is fantastic. And I'll say, hey guys, could we make it do this one thing? And 95% of the time, the team will say, you know what, I think we can. Let's implement that change. So I love that they're so responsive. And so because their mission aligns so closely with my values, and because they are constantly growing and improving and evolving, this is a pretty great place for me to be. So yeah, I'll be here for a while.
Great. Well, I now have a new resource for those diet questions that I might have.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Susan, and hope to talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Neil. It's been a delight.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is made possible through the generous support of the College of Integrative Veterinary Therapies. CIVT provides world-leading education in natural medicine, including 3 accredited postgraduate qualifications, industry-recognized certifications, and a wide range of evidence-based courses and webinars delivered by qualified and experienced practitioners. By bridging cutting-edge science and tradition, CIVT helps you to expand your treatment options to tackle your most challenging cases. And whether you're a veterinarian, veterinary technician or nurse, animal health professional, or someone who wants to learn more, they have the right course for you. Investigate their offerings at civtedu.org. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd appreciate if you take the time to tell a friend and to give us a favorable rating on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for your support. We'll see you next time.